ערב טוב. A brief introduction. I said this in shul a few weeks ago. In 1857, there was a din Torah. The problem was that in the Volozhiner Yeshiva, there were two giants who were working side by side. The Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and the Beis Halevi, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik the First. And there were problems, and the problems were problems in terms of their approach to the study of Torah, their approach to educational policy. It reached a point where the problem was of such a nature that it had to be dealt with. So four great Chabbonim gathered in Volozhin. They were Rab David Tevel, the one who wrote the Nachlas David, great Sefer, Rab David Tevel of Minsk, Rab Yosef Freimer of Slutsk, a young and up-and-coming rabbi, Rab Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, who was then Rav in Nevardok, and he was to become the Gadol Hador in the 19th century. And then the Maggid of Vilna, Rab Velvala, Maggid of Vilna. The Maggid of Vilna introduced the proceedings before this Bed Din in Volozhin. And the Vilna Maggid said the following. The Din Torah took place during the month of Cheshvan. It may have been Parshas Noach, Lech Lecha, maybe Vayecha. And he says, when I come to this Din Torah here between these two great people, I feel I, the Maggid, who always speaks on Parshat HaShavua, isn't that the job of a Maggid to talk about Parshat HaShavua? Yes, but it's Parshat Vayeshev. But you're going to ask, it's not Parshat Vayeshev? So I'll tell you what I mean. So he says, each one of the parashiyot from Bereshis until Vayeshev, there are antagonists. And in each one of the parashiyot, it's so crystal clear who's the good guy and who is the bad guy. You know who's Tov and you know who's Ra. There are really no problems whatsoever in identifying them. If in Bereshis it's Adam and the Nachash, we know what the Nachash is. If it's Cain and Hevel, we know exactly who's good and who's bad, who's evil and who's not. You come to Parshat Noach, you also have on the one hand you have Noach, on the other hand you have the rest of the world that has become corrupt. Or on the one hand you have Avram and you have Nimrod. You may also have Chom on the one hand and Shem and Yafet on the other. We know who's the Tzaddik and who's the Rasha, who's good and who's evil. In Parshat Lech Lecha we already have Avram, Avinu and the four kings. We know exactly, we have no problem. We have no problem of moral equivalency. We don't have this fuzzy idea of, well, you know, can't really be sure who's bad and who's good. Of course, it's clear, it's crystal clear. The lines are so drawn. In Parshat Vayecha, you have Avram, and you have Sodom. You have Yitzchak, and you have Yishmael. In Parshat Chayisori, so you have Eliezer, and you have Lavan. You have Yitzchak and Yishmael again. I mean, we know exactly what's happening over there. In Toldos, of course, then we have already another two opponents. We have Yaakov and Esau finally come upon the scene. In Parshat Vayetze, it's Yaakov against Lavan. We don't have any problem understanding that Yaakov is the tzaddik and Lavan is the Rosha. In Parshat Vayishlach again, we have Yaakov and Esav, the great confrontation. Or is it the Bnei Yaakov and the people of Shechem? No problem. No problem. We have it all figured out. Said the Maggid of Vilna. But when we come to Parshat Vayeshev, it's a whole new story. It's Yosef and his brothers. No. Over here we're not able to say one is right and one is wrong, one is evil and one is righteous, one is the good guy, the others are the bad guys. It's not that simple anymore. We're talking about giants. And whatever it was that divided them, these were serious, serious issues. And it was, there's absolutely no way that any one of us has the right to say this one is good and that one is evil. So he says here in Voloshin, we're going to have now a din Torah between the Netziv Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and we have the Beis Halevi, Rabbi Yosef Tov Halevi Soloveitchik. This is not Parshas Bereishis or any other Parshas until Vayeshev. This is Parshat Vayeshev. Here it's not a matter of, well, he's right and he's wrong, he's tzaddik or the other one is chas v'shalom rasha. There's an element of truth in both of these sides. Why do I say this? I say this because here we've gone through all of the parashot from Vayeshev until now we're at the end of Sefer Bereishis. And we've been dealing with the Yosef and his brothers. There's absolutely no way to really point a finger at anybody. And what's maybe more important than anything else is, and I've said this on one other occasion, I believe, there are those who have the shita of learning Tanakh begova ha'inayim. Some of our Tanakhists in this country, and I'm talking even within the religious community, they see it as a shita. It's an approach that you have the right, maybe even nay, the responsibility to look at the heroes of Tanakh begova ha'inayim. Gova ha'inayim means my eyes facing it, we're on the same level, and therefore, you know, I can go ahead and I can, as I once heard a rabbi say, Yaakov was a mama's boy. You understand? His mother told him to go this, he goes there. Well, it was Yaakov boy. Yosef was a papa's boy. You understand? You can make terrible, terrible, terrible mistakes, and especially when we become Greuse psychologists, you understand? And everybody reads every kind of weakness of their own into the Gedolei HaTanakh boy. There you are, ready to empty the Tanakh of all of its meaning. We don't learn Tanakh begova ha'inayim, my eyes facing them. We learn it through Gova Chazal. How did Chazal take a look at these Gedolei Olam giants to where we are incapable of grasping their greatness? So this occurred to me because here for a moment there was some nice shot that went flying through my head, and then I rejected it. So I want to tell you what it was that went through my head, and I can make a real argument. I mean, I can. Let's take a look. Yeah. Number one, it's almost toward the end of the Sefer, Yoshev Yosef, Mitzchayim, Ahu, V'yachov, V'chol Ha'olim, Yitolim, V'chol Ha'olim, Acharei Kavro Et Aviv. Yosef and all of his brothers are returning now to Mitzchayim after they buried Yaakov in Mitzchayim, in Eretz Yisrael. And they're returning to Mitzrayim from Eretz Yisrael. V'yiru Acharei Yosef, Kimet Aviv, the brothers of Yosef saw that their father died. Vayomer, when they said Lu Yistemenu Yosef, for Hashem Yashiv Lanu, as Kol Hara Asher Gomalnu also, and he's going to repay us all of the evil that we did to him. So they command Yosef, saying, and they tell him, you know, your father commanded before he died, he commanded the following. They're making it up. They are making it up. They say that your father commanded, Ko tomru li Yosef, so shall you say to Yosef, Ono, sono, pesha, achecho, please forgive the sin of your brothers, v'chatosem, and their error, ki rog malucha, they did evil to you, Forgive the sin of the servants of your father's God. Yosef cried when they spoke to him. By the way, Yosef, is he moved to tears. This is the third or fourth, maybe fifth time already that he cries. He cries when Binyamin is brought. He cries before he reveals himself. He meets with his father, finally comes down to Mitzrayim, and he cries. And here he sees that the brothers are afraid that he is going to cause them harm. And I believe there's a certain association here. Where was the word yistameinu, hate, used earlier? You know where it was hurt? You know where it was used? It was used at the end of Parshas Toldos. Vayistom Esav es Yaakov. Esav hated Yaakov. And you know what he said? He said to himself, Yiknevu yimei evel avi, my father is going to die, and I'm going to kill my brother. I'm going to kill him. And so Yosef feels that, look at this. They're afraid that who knows what I'm going to do to them. His brothers went and they fell before him and they said, Hinenu l'chol avodim, we are servants unto you. Vayomer aleihem Yosef said, Al tiro, don't be afraid. Ki atachas elokim ani, am I the place of God? You think this whole history between us, there was a divine hand over here. Atam chashavtam alaygo, you thought evil, but alakim chashavol tova, God thought it to be good. Leman aso kayom hazeh, in order that we should be able to do today, lahach yosam chav, we can keep a whole nation alive because I'm here. Vato al tiro, don't be afraid. Anochi achal keletchem v'tapchem, I'm going to provide for you and for your children. Vayinachem otam, he consoled them. Vayedaber al libam, and he spoke to their hearts. These three words, Vayedaber al libam, this is the end of the story that's been going on for four parashot. Finally reaches the point where he speaks to their heart, and he convinces them that there's no enmity. I mean, the Sefer must end that way, because Shmos is going to be the birth of a nation. This nation cannot be born in divisiveness. The nation has to be born from a family that are all united. Okay. So now, amateur psychologist, we all are. Today, of course, in this country, everybody is a doctor. The blood thinners did it. Okay. Everybody's a doctor. Everybody has an opinion. The blood thinners. Beware of blood thinners. Okay. All right. Everybody's okay. So a psychologist, though, Zicha Yedahaina is a psychologist. So here what occurred to me is that second pasuk, the brothers of Yosef saw that their father died by Yomrim, and they said, Lu yistameinu Yosef. Lu yistameinu Yosef. What kind of word is Lu? You know what Lu can mean? Lu can mean, Lu Yehi, Lu Yehi, Ana Lu Yehi. This is going to sound great on tape. Lu Yehi, if only it would be. If only it would be. So what does it mean if only Yosef would despise us and hate us? So, I've been a psychologist. You know what? They don't know how to handle this fellow Yosef. They don't know how to handle him. He doesn't get angry. He doesn't yell. He doesn't throw things at them. He doesn't express a wrath and fury. How would we have acted if our brothers would have sold us down, who knows, into slavery and be cut off from the family? We'd express explode in a paroxysm of anger. Maybe they're saying, Lo yistameinu Yosef, if only this Yosef would explode in anger at us, give us back everything that we did to him. And then, you know, we have it all out. And you know, then of course, if you throw in a nice word like, a nice psychological word like closure, that we have closure in the whole parsha, and everybody's going to live happily ever after. So it's not said, you should know. When you come to think of it, I'm not saying in ganz Narischheit, you could make a whole case for the brother saying, yeah, by the way, the marriage books say you have to know how to fight. Couples that know how to fight and don't fight dirty, that's good. You know, you get things out. Sometimes we never raised our voices at one another. We never had a fight. 75 years of marriage and we never had a fight. Yeah. So I think to myself, like, these are two dead people that have been married to each other for 75 years. What are you talking about? That's the way it is. That's the way it is. Maybe they're saying, Lo yistameinu Yosef, if only Poshet Yosef al kegeben ha-geshrei, and he'd get it out of his system, we'd know that he has purged himself of it all. He said it all, and it's all over. So my only problem is a Rashi. Now, I'm going to learn this Rashi with you. Follow, we have it with the English translation. I don't know, the more I study this Rashi, the more the Rashi fascinates me. And I, since I said the shiur this morning, I've come up with so much more on this Rashi, which I don't think I'm going to share with you now, because we'll never get down to the heart of the shiur. This is all, by the way, by way of introduction to the shiur. We're not into the shiur yet. Lo yistameinu. See that? Number 4-3, right over there? With the English. This means, Shema yistameinu. Perhaps. Number 3. Perhaps he will nurse hatred against us. Perhaps. That's not the way I translated it. I said, Lo, if only he would. No, Rashi says, perhaps he will nurse hatred against us. Rashi says the following, Lo mitchalek l'inyonim harpe. The word Lo can mean many things. It separates into many meanings. And Rashi is going to give us a number of meanings of Lo. And he's going to bring proof from Psukim to the different meanings of Lo, except for one meaning. And then he's also going to give us the meanings of the word Ulai, which is similar to Lo. You're going to find out all about Lo and all about Ulai. Alright? The word Lo separates into many meanings. Yesh Lo mishamesh bilishon bakasha. There is a usage of Lo which functions as an expression of a wish. Bakasha. Ulishon halavai. And it means, why, if only. That was the pshat that I wanted to say. If only he would hate us. Alright? Rashi is going to reject that. Which means, if only. Kigon Lo yehi kidvorecha. Yaakov tells Lavan, listen, remove all of the brown and the spotted and the speckled of the cattle and whatever is going to be born from now and further. So he says, oh, if only, yes, if only, halavai, it should be as you say. Lavan agrees with him. Okay, that's a great, great deal. For example, if only it will be as you say. Lo shema'eini. I believe that's Avram saying, if only you would listen to me and go ask Ephron ben Tzocha that he should sell me the Ma'arat HaMakpela. Halavai. Velu ho'elnu. A third proof that he brings. Velu ho'elnu. Oh, this is an unbelievable pasuk. It's in chapter 7 in Yehoshua. They've lost the battle of Ai. Yehoshua tears his garments, prostrates himself before God, bemoans the terrible predicament in which they're in. We're going to be surrounded by the Kanani, who will now feel a sense of strength. strength that they were able to vanquish at the Battle of Ai, the mighty Israelis, and they're going to destroy us. V'lu ho'alnu, if only we would have wanted to remain outside of Eretz Yisrael, never come into the country. V'lu ho'alnu, halavai. What a statement. The Rav Hashem gets a little upset with Yehoshua, and he says, listen, Yehoshua, do me a favor. Kom lecha, get up. What are you falling on your face? We got a problem. We're going to deal with the problem. The lu ho'alnu. If only we had decided to remain in Chutz Arts. Lu masnu. Was it Dasan Vavirim? If only we had died with our brothers in Eretz Yisrael. That's one meaning of lu. Halavai, if only. Then, v'yesh lu mishamej b'lishon im v'ulai. And there is a usage of lu which functions as an expression of im, if, or ulai, maybe. Kagon, lu chachmu. If only Jews would have wisdom, they would know that God is the one that stands behind them. For example, lu is used as im, if, in the verse, if they had been wise. Lu hikshafto l'mitzvosai, if you had paid attention to my commandments. V'lu anochi shokel al-kapi, if I would have weighed out upon my palms. That's the second meaning of lu. The first meaning of lu, he said, was bakosha, a request, if only. The second one is if. Then, v'yesh lu mishamej b'lishon shema. Maybe. Lu can also mean maybe. And there is a usage of lu which functions as an expression of perhaps, maybe. Now, for example, what example does Rashi have of lu meaning maybe, shema? Lu yistamenu, the pasuk over here. Perhaps Joseph will nurse hatred against us. Ve'en lo o dome b'mikra. Hear what Rashi is saying? For the other meanings of lu, he brings 3, 4, 5 psukim. When it comes to the meaning that he has decided on for lu in this pasuk, it means perhaps, and incidentally he says, there is no other place in all of Tanakh where you have it, I don't have proof for it. But you know what Rashi is saying? Make no mistake, that's the pshat. You know what Rashi is saying? Gold, don't start giving me your psychological pshatim that lu yistameinu means if only halavai he will hate us and let it all hang out. No, perhaps shema. So first of all, I tell you, I immediately rejected all of my psychological pshatim in this pasuk. I bowed before Rashi. I would imagine that what Rashi is doing is he's looking at the context of the pasuk. They can't really mean, oh God, if only he hates us and does to us what we did to him, sells us off into slavery. They couldn't mean that. Rashi looked at the context of the pasuk, and he therefore decided that the word lu has to mean, perhaps, shema. Rashi is going to go on to say, v'hu l'shon ulai, and then in this pasuk what it means is, it has the meaning of ulai, it's equal to the word ulai, maybe, perhaps, kmo, ulai lo telech ha'isha acharai. Eliezer says, when he repeats the story of his mission, he says to Lavan and Besuel and Rivka, I told my master ulai, maybe the woman will not want to follow me. Perhaps, Rashi learns. Now, here I'll just let you know what's bothering me. I've been sitting and working on it now, and it'll most probably be ready by next year. By Eliezer it says twice ulai. When Avram sends him on his mission, he says ulai lo toveh ha'isha, maybe the woman will not want. Rashi says nothing there. Why doesn't Rashi bring that as proof that ulai is used as perhaps? No, Rashi doesn't do that. Rashi uses the second time when he says ulai lo telech ha'isha acharai. Why didn't he bring the first one? by this second one, the one that Rashi quotes here, this is where Rashi says in Parashat Chaye Sara, Bat Haitali Eliezer. Eliezer had a daughter, and he wanted this daughter to be the wife of Yitzchak. There are things going on over here that I don't understand. I don't understand yet. I'm working on it. Even though I've put a call through to the greatest scholar of Rashi in our generation, my brother who lives in Petach Tikva, and I haven't spoken to him yet, but I'm going to put him to work. I think he knows 12 or 15 Kitvei Yad, the manuscripts of Rashi, Baal Peh. He knows them all, you understand? There's nobody who knows Rashi like him. And he has written a whole new Rashi and Chumash that we hope will be printed the Meheira V'Yameinu. Anyway, I don't have to go through the rest of the Rashi. The rest of the Rashi is going to raise even more problems. He shows how Ulai has a number of the same meanings as Lu. But one thing he says, Lu over here means perhaps, maybe. It doesn't mean if only. I wanted to say if only. It's not if only. Alright, so first of all, I just want to point out that I have to be very, very careful before one approaches a pasuk with their own pshat. But there's another problem here. It's only the last few words, the last three words in the whole story. Do you know what's happening over here? It's 17 years after Yosef has revealed himself to his brothers, and they're still afraid of him. They're convinced that he harbors hatred. 17 years have passed. What went wrong? In 17 years, they didn't learn that we're living already b'shalom, b'shalva. What's going on over here? So I want to tell you, you'll turn over next page, and here is something that Pashit kept me up a whole Friday night, and I haven't recovered yet. I haven't recovered. I'll give an expanded version of what I said in Yeshua on Shabbos, because if I had a whole sleepless Friday night, you understand, you're going to have 20 minutes over here, and you'll understand what's going on. This is one of my tainus to the Rebbein Sham. If you want to give me a good drasha, why can't you do it Thursday? Why do I have to worry a whole day Friday? Why do I have to toss and turn Friday night? What am I going to say? And we had an oifruf in shul, and I knew there were going to be guests, and I don't have what to say. You think it's easy being a rabbi? All right. Number five is the Shemi Shmuel. Shemi Shmuel is the Sachet Shava, the son of the Avnei Nezer. He asks a question. And I don't think we ever thought of it. About the most dramatic moment in all of biblical literature, and most probably in all of literature, period. Let's see the psukim. Number four, Kiech El Avi. This is the end of Yehuda's great plea. Last week said Parshat Vayigash. The last sentence of the great plea. How can I go up to my father and the boy isn't with me, lest I see the evil that will befall my father? V'lo yochol Yosef lehit apek, and Yosef couldn't control himself. L'chol hanitzavim alav, in the presence of all who were standing there. V'yikron, he called out, remove everybody from before me. And nobody was standing there when Yosef revealed himself. V'hit vadag Yosef alachob, when Yosef revealed himself to his brothers. He cries, and Egypt heard, and the house of Paro heard. Yosef el Echov. Yosef said to his brothers, "Ani Yosef, I am Yosef." What? It is so dramatic. It is so shocking. It is one of the peak moments of in all of literature. Lo yachlu echav lanos also. His brothers couldn't enter him. He never loomed upon him because they trembled from before him. The Shem Yishmuel asks a simple question that may shake up and should shake up our whole perception of this great moment. We sort of have this impression, you know, this was produced and directed by Yosef. You understand? This is it. It's the peak moment. The music is reaching a real crescendo, and then you hear booming out on me, Yosef, God, and everything breaks loose. But wait a minute. The pasuk says Yosef couldn't control himself. Do you know what that means? Yosef's plan was completely different. He didn't want to reveal himself to his brothers now. He couldn't control himself. He couldn't help himself. So the Shem Yishmuel asks, what was he waiting for anyway? How much longer does he have to torture them? How many months has this been going on already? They stand before this Chafnas Paneach, and he accuses them of being spies. He puts them in prison, takes them out of prison. They can't come back without their brother. They come with their brother. He frames him, puts the cup by Binyamin. Binyamin is now going to be taken. This has gone on for months. How much longer does he want it to go on? What do you mean, below Yachol Yosef Liyasapik? He couldn't control himself. And he bursts out on the Yosef. How much more? How much more do you want to torture them? And what about a father who's concerned about a Binyamin? Every minute that he doesn't know what's happened to Binyamin is for him a year of suffering and punishment. But that doesn't make any difference to you. What do you mean, Yachol Yosef Litapek? Yosef couldn't control himself. What more do you want? Did the brothers now say that they're ready to lay their lives down for Binyamin? What more do you want? You want blood? What do you want? The Shem Yishmuel gives an answer. It is Hasidic in nature, but even deeper, it is Kabbalah. I don't understand it. I don't understand it, so I can't tell you. I can say words. The brothers still need to be metaken certain nitzotzots of Kedusha that was flying around in Danish. In one of the Shabbos sheets that they give out, I think it was Machon Meir's or something, so somebody brings one line from Rav Kook, and on the basis of the one line from Rav Kook, he explains, gives an answer to the Shem Yishmuel's question. Two strikes for me. I didn't understand that either. I can't even say it over. So that means I'm left in the middle of Friday night to my own devices. So I came up with two pshatim. One would seem to be sort of pshat, and the other already goes not into the murky area of psychology, because I told you I'm not. But listen, I'll let you judge. The last thing in the world that Yosef wanted was this horrible, devastating, shocking surprise. What we consider, correctly so, as this great moment in literature, that's the last thing he wanted. He didn't want his brothers to tremble before him. V'lo yochlu echov lanos, also his brothers couldn't answer him, ki nivhalu miponav, because they trembled before him. It's the last thing in the world. He was looking and searching for ways in which he would be able to drop a hint here, a hint there, and sort of ease them into a moment at which he would be able to reveal himself in a very calm, dispassionate manner, one in which they would not shudder and tremble before him. Because he had it figured out. He knows that the price of their trembling, the shock, is something that will stay with them for many years to come. And it's going to take me a long time until I can rebuild my relationship with them. He doesn't want that. It's going to take 17 years. It's only at the end of the Sefer, and 17 years later, they're still terrified of him. Vayedaber al livam. Why doesn't he do it now? No, he can't. In the aftermath of this great shock, there are times when you can talk to people, there are times when you can't talk to people. You know what a moment this is for the brothers? We all remember, not all, I'm sorry. I think we all remember where we were when President Kennedy was assassinated. Understand? We can even be honest and say there are some of us here who remember exactly where we were and what we were doing when the Second World War ended. And there are those amongst us who remember when the Spanish-American War, exactly where we were, when Teddy Roosevelt went to charge the top of the mountain. Okay. You don't forget a moment like Tzofnas Paneach saying, Ani Yosef. That leaves an indelible impression. Yosef knows that if that's going to happen, then it's going to take a long, long time until he's able to rebuild his relationship with his brothers. That's why the Pasuk says, "V'lo yochol lehit apeik," he couldn't control himself, because if he could have controlled himself, he would never have let it happen. He never planned it this way. Never, ever. He didn't want to shock them. He didn't want to terrify them. He didn't want to shake their equilibrium. Didn't want it. Didn't want it in the worst way. And we see that he had to pay for it. Yeah, it took another 17 years until he was able to reach the point of Vayedaber al libam. He spoke to their hearts and they heard him. There's a second shot. By the way, when did I start thinking about all of this? Last Wednesday night. Now believe me, I stopped watching TV a long time ago. And even when I did, it was the news. But then the news got so horrible, I couldn't even watch that anymore. I went back to it, I turned on the TV again, and God, it wasn't even at home, it was someplace else in the country. During the course of the expulsion of Jews from Gush Katif, and sat in front of a TV with my wife, and we cried for 3 days since then. Terrible. Somehow or other, I don't know how, we put on the TV about 12 o'clock Wednesday night, and we see the scene is the Hadassah Hospital in Kerem. Well, you know, we thought the whole day they'd been saying that tomorrow is going to be the Tzintur, the Kayah, and how many hours it'll take and how many minutes, and will there be anesthetic, not anesthetic. What's Wednesday night? I mean, he's not going into the hospital until tomorrow morning. And then as we started picking up words here and there, no, he's in hospital now. The unexpected. Mamish, the unexpected. It came as a shock. Now it's already old hat, but Wednesday night, this was a big shock. I started, you know, and shock sends you into, you start thinking in all sorts of directions. What will be? What's going to happen with the whole political setup in the country? Who's going to be this? Who's going to be here? Who knows what's going to happen? Which Hilaria will be a prime minister in his place? Who knows what's going to be? We can end up with an Ehud Olmert. I don't know. An Amir Peretz. Who has a clue? It's all open. Everything has changed. And you go into a tiz. So I started thinking of being in a tiz. So you see, TV brings me to a pasuk in Torah. But then there's a second shot that I have. What was Yosef waiting for, the Shemi Shmueles? What's he waiting for? What do you mean, because v'lo yochol Yosef litapek, he can't control himself, therefore he blurts it out on the Yosef. What's he going to wait for? How much longer is he going to keep this dark secret that he knows he must reveal? In a word, Yosef didn't want to reveal himself to his brothers. He wanted his brothers to reveal him. How is it for months there isn't a soul who says, wait a minute,
That voice is familiar. We know that man. Reuben. Take a closer look. Look beyond the beard. You don't know who that is? Doesn't happen. And I know what you're thinking. And watch, I'm going to shatter what you're thinking. Everybody knows the Rashi. That when the brothers are first brought before Yosef, Vayaker Yosef et Echov, Yosef recognized his brothers, the Hain Lohiki Ruhu, and they didn't recognize him. Yeah, okay? So she's going over there with her hand by the beard. That's what? Why? When he left, they had beards, but he didn't have a beard. Now he has a beard. Okay. It's happened to me 1,000 times that I'll meet a friend 10, 15, 20 years later, and when we learned together in yeshiva, he didn't have a beard, and now he does have a beard, and I start talking to him, the voice gives a click, a little, a shmeichel or a heen or a hair, and you figure out who it is. But here I have a better question. Rashi himself says, at the beginning of Parsha Fayeshev, Eileh told us Yaakov, these are the generations of Yaakov, Yosef. So Rashi says over there, whatever happened to Yaakov happened to Yosef. Yaakov, his brother, hated him. Yosef, his brother, hates him. Yaakov has to run away. Yosef has to go away. And then Rashi makes an awesome statement. And you know what else was special about the relationship between Yaakov and Yosef? Yosef looked like Yaakov. Zivi Kunin, he looked like him. Did they see Yaakov with a beard for how many years? Why can't they recognize Yosef with a beard? And not only that, this Yosef has been dropping a trail of hints. He invites them to dinner, and there are place cards. It's the very Pasuk in Torah. And that's Reuven, Shimon, Levi, you know, according to their birth dates. I don't even know if it was Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. I don't remember who comes afterwards, you know, according to their birth dates. And they're sitting at the table. The Pasuk says that they're sitting at the table and they're looking at one another. Who knew this? He's not sending a massive hint. They come home and they open up their sacks of grain and everybody has their money returned over there. That's not a hint. And Rashi even points to another one. Do you always ask people who come from all over the world whether they have a father or a brother? There's all sorts of conversations going on. Father, brother, brother. What? This is what you ask everybody? And you can't come back until your little brother is... The man has been not simply hinting. He's been shouting to them, I'm in Yosef, and they don't recognize him. You're going to ask me why? Then we're going to have to go into the murky area of psychology, and I'm not going to do that. Yosef does not want to reveal himself to his brothers. He wants his brothers to reveal him. That's what he's waiting for. And that's why Yosef had absolutely no intention ever of coming out with the two words, "I'm me Yosef, I am Yosef." You know what he's waiting for? Atu Yosef! You Yosef! Come on! Stop this Safnas Paner charade! We know who you are! And it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. This is the way I see the answer to the Shem Yishmuel's question, what's he waiting for? What's he waiting for? He doesn't want to shock them because he's going to pay for it. In terms of the length of time it's going to take to rebuild the relationship. And he doesn't want to be the one who reveals it at all. That was never part of his plan. I don't know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure why they don't get it. I'm not sure why it doesn't occur to anybody. I don't know. I have a problem with that. I have a problem. So, you know what you do? We think about it. I don't know. Maybe I'll find a medrash someplace. What?
what happened over here? Or maybe a real good psychology book that's going to tell me what happened over here. Was he the source? I shouldn't say what I'm going to say now, but you know, he's been the source of a great deal of pain for them for the last 22 years. Every time they take a look at Yaakov and they see the depression, the sadness, it's not the same Tata that they knew. It's not the same Tata they knew. But they can't say anything to him. There's nothing they can do. I don't know, does it mean therefore that they just have to move Yosef to the back of their consciousness and blot him out? Amateur psychology stuff? I don't know. But there's certainly something wrong over here that they don't get it. Something's wrong. Something's gone wrong. I have a little proof to my chat. But all the Rashis that I mentioned and the Medrashim, I have them all on the sheet over here, so if anybody wants, you can see it. So let's go to number 8 down at the bottom. And this is a little bit of a proof to what I have been saying, at least to part of what I've been saying. I know you can't read that first line, I'll read it for you, it's a Ramban. This is in Vayigash, the brothers come home and they tell the father everything that Yosef had said. Yir'eli, the Ramban says, it seems to me, al derech hapshat. It seems to me, and this is a phenomenal, phenomenal Ramban. It seems to me, al derech hapshat, shelo hugad li Yaakov kol yomov ki echov machru et Yosef. It seems to me, according to the pshat, and by the way, the Ramban must say according to the pshat because the Medrash definitely disagrees. The Ramban says, according to the pshat, Yaakov was not told by anyone during his whole lifetime what had happened to Yosef. The brothers had said to Yosef, he never knew. So what did he think? Aval Choshav, you know what he thought? You know, he questioned them. Ki hayotor v'sodeh. He thought to himself that Yosef wandered in the field. V'hamotzimoto, those who found him, lakchuhu, machru oto Mitzrayim, took him and they sold him to Mitzrayim. You see, because there was information that he must have been available. He sent Yosef to Shechem. But Yosef comes to Shechem and the brothers aren't there. Now, probably Yaakov after the asked them, where were you when they come home with the cloak of Yosef? Where were you? We were in Dothan. Dothan! I sent Yosef to Shechem. I thought you were in Shechem. Yeah, we were, Pa, but we left and we went to Dothan. Yaakov therefore creates in his whole mind that here is this boy wandering between Shechem and Dothan. Whatever happened, so first he thinks it's for 22 years he thinks that he's been consumed by a chaya ro, but now 22 years later he finds out that he's really alive, so something else must have happened with his coat. I don't know, they took off his coat and threw it in the field, but Yosef was found by people in the field who sold him forcibly to Egypt. And now the Ramban goes through a process of elimination. He says, it's not possible for anybody to have told Yaakov. Who would have told him? So he says, Ki echov lo ratzu lahagid lo chatatam. The brothers certainly were not going to tell him the terrible thing that they had done. Pa, you know, that time, let it all hang out. You know what we did? We took your chachkal over there. And we sold him into slavery. It's not shaykh. Nobody would say that because they were terrified of Yaakov. Afki yodul and afsham, they were frightened. Pen yitzo for Yaakov, he'll get angry and he'll curse them, just as he does in this week's sedrit to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Now look at the line. What's underlined? V'Yosef b'musaro hatov lo ratzol hagidlo. Yosef is a moral and a good individual. Not a chance, the Ramban says, not a chance that Yosef is going to go to his father and say, Tata, Levin, you got yourself a bunch of chevra over here? You're proud? You have Yiddish and Achus on them? You know that they sold me off into some... Not a chance. Never have told him. Yosef b'musaro atov, I'm taking it one step further. He does not want to do anything that's going to exacerbate the relationship between himself and his brothers. He wants to rebuild the brotherhood. If he tells it to Yaakov, that's the end. It's all over. There will never be a family. That's what he wants to do from now until the end of Sefer Bereishis. That's why he doesn't want to shock them with Ani Yosef. Because that also will set back their relationship. Now, see what the Rabban says further. Because Yosef is good. And nobody will tell the father. That's why over here at the end of Vayichil, Kach Nema, that's why it says, Vayitzavu Yosef Lemor, they commanded Yosef saying, they make up the story, your father commanded that you should forgive us. If Yaakov would have known what had happened, if Yaakov would have known that they had sold Yosef, they would have gone directly to Yaakov and say, Tata, before you die, make him promise and swear not to hurt us. Why didn't they do it? Why did they have to make up a lie? Because Yaakov never knew. Nobody ever told him. Who was going to tell him? What?
To forgive.
They sold him into slavery.
They didn't tell Yaakov. How could they tell him that Yaakov told him to forgive him?
How could they know to do that?
Because whatever, there was still an old cheshbon from 22 years earlier. They hated each other. Going back to the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. Vayeshev, they hated him. He doesn't have to know that all 22 years of his being sold into Mitzrayim is not where it all started. They didn't like his dreams. The father knew. It says at the beginning of Vayeshev, the father knew. The brothers must have told him, listen, we can't take this guy's dreams. And his father told him, how can it be? It's not going to happen. He knows that there's bad blood. But he doesn't know that they sold him into slavery. Lamar Hashem. Nobody's going to tell him that. And since nobody's going to tell him that, so they make up this story that, listen, your father said, he knows way back then, there wasn't such great blood between us. Forgive us. But would Yaakov have known that they had sold him into slavery? They would have asked Yaakov, listen, Tata Laban, you're going to die. What's going to happen to us afterwards? He'll have us in his hands. Would Yaakov have known? They should have begged their father to command Yosef from his own mouth. Because they would listen to him. They wouldn't rebel against the words of Yaakov. They would never therefore be in danger. They wouldn't have to make up lies. Why couldn't they do that? Because Yaakov didn't know. Nobody ever told him. And certainly Yosef would not tell him. Because Yosef wants only to rebuild the relationship and not do anything that is going to seal the fate of their relationship for all time. That's why he doesn't want to reveal himself in this Spielberg kind of great moment on the Yosef. The last thing he wants to do, v'lo yochel Yosef li'itapek, that's why he said on the Yosef. And then it's going to take until the end of Vayechi, until Vayedaber alibam, he spoke to their hearts, and finally he resolves the bad feelings between him and his brother. It's going to take those 17 years after the 22 years of his dreams. Yes? What about Binyamin? Did Binyamin know? Number one, I don't know if Binyamin knew. If you would ask me to take a guess whether Binyamin knew, my guess would be that Binyamin didn't know. You may recall there was once a shiur which I gave about a Medrash Tanchuma, where the Medrash Tanchuma says that the brothers accepted upon themselves an oath, shelo yagid echad mehem, an oath under a ban of excommunication that nobody should tell Yaakov what had taken place. There were only 9 brothers present at the time. Reuven was home that day, so Yehuda says the ban needs a minion and we only have 9 people. And then Yehuda said, let's ask God to be the 10th it to the minion, and God agrees, and therefore it says he didn't tell, even though God tells Yaakov everything. Magid devarov li Yaakov, he says things to Yaakov, this he never told them. Yitzchak knew that he was sold into slavery, and Yitzchak didn't say because he knew of the ban of excommunication. Binyamin, one of two things. Either he never knew because they had all taken an oath not to say a word about it, or if they did tell him, then he had to come under the same category of the ban of excommunication. So there's nobody who would have told him. Rashi, of course, and this is not for today, that's a completely different shiur that we said 20 years ago. Rashi and the Medrash certainly hold that Yaakov knew. How he knew, not going into that. I only wanted it, yes. It's in the Rashi. It's in the Rashi of Miterev B'ni Olisa, right here in this. That's not the, I don't want to mix up issues. The issue of this shiur was Ani Yosef planned, or was it the last thing in the world that Yosef wanted to do? It was the last thing. He didn't want to shock them. He wanted to ease them into the knowledge that he's Yosef. And the second thing that I said is, he would have wanted more than anything else in the world that they should say to him, Ato Yosef. Erev Tov.
He had a mouth, but he didn't say.
That's very nice. Very nice. Very nice. That medrash taka may mean that he did know, but it's not clear. Very good. I like that.
Just everybody's small moment.